The kitchen at Grand Street smelled of boiled cabbage and damp plaster, the same as it had for 3 days. Pearl sat at the scarred wooden table with her father's case books spread before her, the gas lamp hissing overhead, casting long shadows against the peeling wallpaper. Outside, a horse clattered over cobblestones. Somewhere upstairs, a baby cried. The city breathed through the floorboards, steady and indifferent. She had the blueprints rolled in their canvas tube beside her. And she had these book 6 volumes of her father's handwriting, meticulous and cramped, documenting every conversation, every observation, every suspicion he'd entertained about Selah's vein in the 18 months before he fell from the clock tower. She reached for the first volume, but her sleeve caught the edge of the second, sending it sliding to the floor. She knelt to retrieve Etand Froese. The back cover had split along the stitching, the leather flap hanging loose. Something metallic glinted in the gaslight from within the hollow cavity behind the binding. Pearl worked her fingernails under the flap, prying it open. Her fingers closed around cold metal. She drew it free, a key, standard pattern, teeth selectively filed down, wrapped in a scrap of oilcloth. She unwrapped it. The metal was warm from being hidden, from being kept close. Her father's final secret, sewn into the spine of his last casebook. She always finds things he'd written. For once, she believed him. Pearl ran her finger along the spine of the first volume. The leather was cracked, the gold lettering worn smooth. She'd inherited them the week after the funeral, stacked in a cardboard box on her doorstep with a note that read simply, "For Pearl, if I don't." She hadn't opened them until now. The first entry was dated October 12, 1896, 2 weeks after her father's last shift at the mill. Met with Thomas Erickson at the salutation. He claims Vane has been pressuring foremen to cut corners on the railway supports. Erickson refuses to name sources, says the men are scared. I told him fear is a luxury workers can't afford. He disagreed. Pearl read it twice, then she turned the page. October 19th. Visited the machine shop on Orchard. Locks appear tampered with, oil residue on the tumblers, size 9 or 10 dress shoe tread found near the rear exit. Noted. November 3rd. Vane's townhouse. Servant says the master practices piano scales nightly. Scales only, no music, as though he's counting something. She kept reading. Page after page, month after month, her father's handwriting growing shakier as the investigation progressed. He'd been close, closer than she'd known. He'd documented the grease on the rail joints. He'd noted the pattern of every third column. He'd recorded conversations with workers who'd seen men in gray coats lurking near the construction sites. November 3rd, Vane's townhouse. Servant says the master practices piano scales nightly, scales only, no music. As though he's counting something. Vane proffered a bribe sufficient to clear the rent and settle the doctor's bill. I refused. He smiled. Said he understands the weight of family obligations. Said he knows the cost of keeping a roof overhead. Said he knows the price of bread. He thinks he owns me. He doesn't, but he thinks he owns the city. And that terrifies me. Pearl closed the book. Her hands were shaking. She looked at the gas lamp. The flame was steady, yellow and bright. She could turn it down. She could let the room go dark. She could sit in the darkness and decide what to do with these pages. But she didn't. She kept reading. The later entries were fragmented, scrawled in pencil, as though he'd been writing by flashlight or in hiding. December 14th. Elena Rossi's building, men in gray coats outside, not NYPD, not uniformed. Watching, I followed one for 2 blocks, lost him on Grand. He moved too fast for a man his size. Men in gray coats. The words hit her with the force of a physical blow. She'd seen them, hadn't she? On the tenement roofs near Grand Street 3 nights ago. Figures slouched against parapets, hats pulled low, faces shadowed. She'd thought them ghosts or drunk seeking warmth. Now she read her father's description, not NYPD, not uniformed. Watching and the pieces locked into place with terrible clarity. These weren't random watchers. They were Vane's eyes, placed strategically around the tenements, tracking every movement, every visitor, every whisper. And Alina's building had been on their list. She could picture them now, clear as daguerreotypes. The heavy wool coats, the way they shifted their weight when footsteps approached, the patient stillness of men who had nowhere else to be and all night to wait. Her father had followed one for 2 blocks and lost him. She'd walked past them without knowing what they were. December 20th. found the key, sewn into Erickson's hem, standard pattern but teeth modified, filed selectively, fits a non-standard lock. Vane's office, the factory, both need to test. December 23rd. Vane knows I have the key, he knows I'm close. He sent a man in a gray coat to my apartment. I was out. The man waited, 3 hours, left at midnight. I checked the locks. All secure, except the window. The latch was broken, forced from outside. The last entry, 3 days before he died. December 26th. I'm being followed. The men in gray coats are everywhere. I've hidden the key, I've hidden the notes. If anything happens to me, Pearl will find them. She always finds things. She's better than I was, better than I'll ever let her know. Pearl set the book down. Her throat was tight. She blinked rapidly, refusing to cry. Crying was for those with the luxury of breaking down. She did not possess such luxury. She had work to do. She opened the second volume, and the third, and the fourth. By the fifth book, she understood the scope of what she held. These weren't just case notes. They were an indictment. Every conversation, every observation, every suspicion her father had entertained about Selah's Vane was documented here in meticulous, damning detail. The workers' testimonies, the patterns of sabotage, the bribes offered and refused, the men in gray coats, the key, the blueprints, everything. If she gave these books to Doyleff, she gave them to anyone they would expose Vane's operation. They would prove that Thomas Erickson had been murdered. They would bring every man in a gray coat to justice. And they would expose every worker who had spoken to her father, every seamstress who had overheard a conversation, every machinist who had seen something he shouldn't have, the union leaders, the foremen, the night watchmen, dozens of names, dozens of families, all documented in her father's cramped handwriting. Vane was dead, but his successors weren't, and they wouldn't hesitate to eliminate witnesses. Pearl unrolled the vellum, the paper crackling in the stillness. She could use those. She could prove the sabotage without exposing the workers. The crimson crosses on the columns were enough, enough to halt the construction, enough to force an inspection, enough to save the people who would have died when those columns collapsed. But the case books contained everything else. Everything that could protect the workers from retaliation. Everything that could implicate them in Vane's conspiracy, whether they wanted to be implicated or not. She picked up the first volume, held it over the gas lamp. The flame flickered. The paper caught quickly yellow, then orange, then black. The edges curled inward, the pages fusing together as the heat grew. She watched her father's handwriting disappear, letter by letter, word by word, until there was nothing left but ash and the smell of burning paper. She dropped the first volume into the basin, then the second, then the third. Each one went faster than the last. She'd done this before in Chinatown, with the vile way had given her. Burning evidence, destroying proof, protecting the people who couldn't protect themselves. By the time she reached the sixth volume, her hands were steady. Her face was dry. She felt nothing. No grief, no guilt, no regret. Just the quiet certainty that she'd made the right choice. The last page went up in flames. Her father's final entry, she always finds things. She's better than I was burned into ash and vanished. Pearl sat in the dim light, the basin filled with gray dust, the canvas tube still rolled on the table beside her. She touched the blueprints once, then rolled them tighter and tucked them inside her coat. She would take them to Alina's brother at the Tribune. She would let him publish the maps. She would let the city see the red X's and understand what was coming. And she would let the inspectors find the grease and the modified locks and the evidence of sabotage without ever knowing the names of the men and women who tried to stop it. The workers would survive. The railway would be inspected. And the truth, her father's truth, the workers' truth would live in the ash of 6 casebooks, buried beneath the floorboards of apartment 4, forgotten by everyone except the rats and the damp. Pearl stood, her ankle throbbed, her body ached. She was tired in a way that sleep wouldn't fix, a bone-deep exhaustion that came from carrying too much for too long. She blew out the gas lamp, leaving the kitchen in darkness. She paused at the door, her hand on the knob. Behind her, the basin of ash cooled silently. The blueprints rested against her ribs, solid and real. The key burned in her pocket. She opened the door, stepped into the hallway, closed it softly behind her. The stairs groaned under her weight as she descended, each step a negotiation with pain. She reached the ground floor without incident, pushed open the front door, and stepped onto Grand Street. The city was awake, not fully still early, still gray, but the day shift was beginning. Milk carts rattled past, newsboys stacked papers against lampposts. A baker swept his stoop, shaking the dust from his broom. Nobody looked at her. Nobody noticed the woman in the dark coat, limping slowly south, the blueprints hidden against her chest like a secret she was finally ready to tell. She turned the corner onto Broome Street and kept walking. The station house was ahead, Doyle's desk, his weary gray eyes, his confession about Holloway. She would meet him there. She would give him the blueprints. She would tell him what she'd done with the casebooks. And he would understand. He had to, because understanding was the only thing that made any of this bearable. Pearl reached the station house at 7 o'clock. The front doors were unlocked. She pushed through into the main room, the familiar smell of wet wool and stale tobacco wrapping around her like a blanket. The desk was empty. No Doyle, no Holloway, just a stack of paperwork and a cup of coffee that had gone cold hours ago. She set the canvas tube on the desk, unrolled the blueprints, spread them across the wood. The red X's caught the morning light, stark and accusatory. She waited. 10 minutes passed, then 20. The station house remained silent. No footsteps in the hallway, no voice calling her name, no Sergeant Doyle appearing with a cup of fresh coffee and a weary nod. Pearl touched the key in her pocket. Then she picked up the blueprints, rolled them back up, and walked out. Outside, the sky was gray. The wind was cold. And the city stretched out before her, vast and indifferent, waiting to see what she would do next. She pulled her coat tighter around her and started walking south, toward the Bowery, toward apartment 4, toward the life she had almost lost. Behind her, the station house stood silent. Ahead of her, the morning waited. And somewhere in the middle, Pearl Casey walked, carrying the weight of 6 casebooks turned to ash, the blueprints pressed against her ribs, and the key burning in her pocket like a promise she wasn't sure she intended to keep. The street lamp above her flickered once, twice, then went dark. Pearl didn't stop walking. She kept going. Past the bakery, past the milk cart, past the newsboy stacking his papers against the lamppost, past the man in the gray coat who stood at the corner of Broome and Grand, watching her go. She didn't look at him, she didn't slow down, she didn't reach for her revolver. She just kept walking. Because stopping wasn't an option. Not anymore. Not when the work was this important. Not when the people she was protecting couldn't afford for her to hesitate. Pearl Casey stepped out into the gray morning, the blueprints heavy against her chest, and turned toward the Bowery without looking back.